Acatra Foundation presents the Acatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Acatra AI. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're taking a deep dive into the mind of one of America's really iconic entrepreneurs, Sam Walton.
That's right.
We've gone through comprehensive summaries of his autobiography, Made in America, and it tells this incredible story of how he built Walmart, basically from the ground up, starting from just a single small town store.
It's a truly fascinating look, isn't it? How these seemingly simple, almost old-fashioned business principles, when you apply them relentlessly, maybe innovatively too,
right,
they can not only challenge the big players, but completely redefine an entire industry.
Yeah. So our mission today really is to unpack these sources we've looked at and pull out those timeless lessons, things that could benefit any of you listening. Maybe you're an aspiring entrepreneur or a seasoned manager trying to navigate things, or maybe you're just, curious about what drives that kind of monumental success.
Especially against the odds. Exactly. What makes someone like that tick?
Okay, let's unpack this then. Let's get right into Sam Walton's world. So we're talking Sam Walton, born 1918, passed away in 92, and he wasn't like an academic theorist sitting in an office, was he?
Not at all. No, he was very much hands-on, the architect of Walmart, Sam's Club.
Right. And what I find really compelling is his background, humble beginnings, rural Missouri during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
This wasn't someone born with a silver spoon. He was a doer, a builder, literally from the ground up.
That's precisely it. And the book, Made in America, it's not just a dry business text. It's this interesting hybrid, part autobiography, sure, but also a really practical business manual. And you could even say it's got a philosophical angle, about building something lasting.
How so?
Well, its core argument isn't about like complicated financial tricks or fancy MBA strategies. It basically says revolutionary success comes from this unwavering commitment to, three main things.
Okay.
Radical customer service, number one. Empowering employees, he called them associates, which is key.
Right. Associates.
And then just this absolute relentless push for operational excellence, getting things done efficiently. It really does answer that question. How did this small town merchant build the world's biggest retailer?
By challenging conventional wisdom, sounds like.
Totally. He dared to question pretty much everything people took for granted in retail back then.
I love that idea, challenging conventional wisdom. It's almost a bit of a buzzword now, but he actually lived it. So let's rewind. Go back to the beginning. How did those early years, growing up in that specific time and place, shape him, lay the groundwork?
Oh, massively. His childhood during the Great Depression was incredibly formative. It really instilled values that stuck with him forever.
Like what specifically?
Well, the value of hard work, for one, not just as a concept, but like a daily reality. He learned about profit and loss firsthand, the absolute need for efficiency.
From doing what?
Oh, all sorts. Milking the family cows, selling the surplus milk door to door, delivering newspapers, waiting tables. These weren't just chores, They were his first business lessons. Supply and demand, dealing with customers, squeezing value out of every bit of effort.
Wow. Real world MBA right there.
Pretty much. Then later, college at the University of Missouri worked his way through, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Military service gave him leadership experience, showed him different ways organizations work. And then his very first retail job after the war, JCPenney.
Ah, okay. So he saw the inside of a more established operation.
Exactly. Got a taste of traditional retail.
So he gets this early exposure, these lessons in hard work, efficiency. But it sounds like he wasn't just passively absorbing it, right? He started tinkering immediately.
He absolutely did, straight away. 1945, right after the war, he buys his first store, a Ben Franklin variety store franchise in Newport, Arkansas.
Okay.
And almost from day one, he's innovating, doing things differently than the standard franchise playbook.
Right.
Staying open later than competitors, offering a broader mix of stuff, always, always focusing on customer convenience. He wasn't just running the store. He was trying to, optimize it constantly.
And did it work?
Did it ever. He famously turned it into the most profitable Ben Franklin in the whole state within just a few years.
That's impressive for a first go.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets really interesting and maybe kind of crucial for him.
Yeah.
He lost that store, didn't he?
He did. Lost that incredibly successful first store. It's quite a twist.
What on earth happened?
It's a moment that really defines his future thinking. Basically, a huge oversight. There was no renewal clause in his lease.
Oh, no.
Yep. So the landlord just refused to renew took over the thriving business Sam had built, poof, gone.
Ouch. Can you imagine the frustration?
Exactly. It wasn't just a setback. It was a deeply painful lesson, but invaluable. It hammered home the absolute need for meticulous attention to detail, especially the legal stuff.
Right. Read this fine print.
And the critical importance of ownership, controlling your assets, securing your future. This experience directly shaped his later real estate strategy for Walmart. He made sure he wouldn't get caught like that again. It was about controlling his own destiny, you know?
That sounds like the kind of gut punch that could stop a lot of people in their tracks. Permanently.
For sure.
But he was, what, completely undeterred. He and his wife Helen just picked up and moved to Bentonville, Arkansas, opened Walton's Five and Dime.
Incredible resilience, wasn't it?
Yeah. And this is where we really start seeing the seeds of the Walmart we know today, right?
And totally. This period in Bentonville is where his unique approach really starts to bloom. He became famous for just relentless observation, constant learning.
How so?
He'd drive hundreds of miles in his old pickup truck, apparently, visiting competitors, Kmart, whoever, even took trips overseas later on. And he'd, in his own words, shamelessly borrow ideas.
Shamelessly borrow. I love that.
Yeah. Store layouts, pricing ideas, how they displayed merchandise, anything. He had absolutely zero ego about learning from anyone, anywhere, if it meant making his store better.
What do you think allowed him to just shed that ego? Most people want to invent it themselves.
That's a great question, I think. Maybe it was just that deep humility. And a laser focus on the customer and the business itself, maybe. Not his own pride.
Makes sense. It wasn't about being original just to be original. It was about delivering the best value.
Exactly. Which is fascinating how that intense learning led him to such a revolutionary idea.
It was.
Well, during this period, he became utterly convinced the future was discounting, selling stuff cheap, high volume.
Okay, but others were doing discounting too, right? Like Kmart.
They were, yes. But they were all focused on the big cities. Following the established wisdom, you know, population centers.
Right.
Walton asked this revolutionary, almost backward-sounding question, why not in small towns?
Huh.
All the experts at conventional wisdom said, no way. Rural areas just didn't have the customer base, the density to support that high-volume discount model.
They thought he was crazy?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But this contrarian insight, this belief in serving the underserved, that was the bedrock. That's what Walmart was built on. He saw this untapped market, what people now call a blue ocean.
Right. Uncontested space.
Exactly. Where he could grow and get strong before the big guys even noticed.
And so, 1962, he's 44, he and his brother Bud opened the very first Walmart discount city, Rogers, Arkansas.
That's the one.
And it sounds like it was hardly glamorous, right? Built on a shoestring budget.
Oh, yeah. Very basic. But it embodied his core idea. Offer brand name products at the lowest possible price.
Simple, but powerful. And hard to argue with the results looking back.
Absolutely. The results speak for themselves. I mean, Walmart stock gave investors something like a 29.5% annual return while he was leading it. Astounding.
Wow.
And his whole philosophy, refined over decades, right, through countless experiments, adjustments, it eventually got summarized in his 10 rules for building a business.
Ah, yes, the 10 rules.
Covered everything. Committing to your business, sharing profits with associates, there's that word again, meticulously controlling expenses. And like we said, swimming upstream, going against the grain.
So his legacy isn't just the sheer size of Walmart.
No, not just the scale. It's the disruption it caused, how it fundamentally changed retail, created massive value for consumers, no doubt.
But it wasn't without controversy, was it?
Oh, definitely not. And it's important to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Walmart reshaped small town economies, often dramatically. There were, and still are, serious concerns about its impact on local businesses, on labor practices.
Did he address that?
He did, yeah. Head on in the book, actually. He acknowledged the disruption, but firmly defended the net positive for consumers. Lower prices, greater choice. It's a complex legacy, for sure, but undeniably built on these core, powerful principles.
Okay, so given all that, the journey, the success, the complexity, what were those driving forces? What were the core beliefs that really made up what he called the Walmart way? What stands out is truly foundational to you?
You know, his philosophy wasn't actually that complex on the surface. It was the application that was incredible, relentless, almost obsessive.
That's...
At its absolute heart was customer supremacy. His most famous quote really nails it. There's only one boss, the customer. And he can fire everybody in the company from the chairman on down simply by spending his money somewhere else.
Oh, that's blunt.
It is. But it wasn't just a slogan for a poster. Every single decision, pricing, store hours, layout, what products they stocked, everything was viewed through the lens of, does this benefit the customer? He genuinely believed if you nail that, everything else falls into place.
That's a powerful idea, often talked about, rarely truly lived, maybe. What made it real at Walmart, do you think? Not just a slogan.
I think it was his constant presence. He wasn't stuck in some fancy headquarters. He was in the stores, talking to customers, listening, watching what they bought. He saw it all through their eyes.
Okay.
And doubly connected to that, baked in from his depression childhood, was extreme frugality and cost control.
Yes, the legendary frugality.
Absolutely legendary. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just him driving an old pickup. It was institutionalized. Control your expenses better than your competition, he'd say.
How did that look day to day?
No lavish HQs, executives flew coach, sometimes shared hotel rooms on trips. Every single dollar saved was seen as a dollar they could pass back to the customer through lower prices.
So it directly fueled the customer supremacy idea.
Exactly. They were two sides of the same coin. It became a core part of the company culture.
Makes perfect sense. Customer focus, low costs.
Yeah.
What else was integral?
Next, and this was pretty radical for its time, was empowerment and partnership with associates.
The associates thing again.
Yes. He hated the traditional top-down hierarchy. He genuinely saw employees as partners. He started profit sharing and stock ownership plans very early on.
Really? That early?
Yeah, and maybe even more surprising. He shared detailed financial information transparently with everyone, even junior staff.
Wow. Financials with all employees back then. That's progressive.
It really was. He truly believed the best ideas came from the people on the front lines. And if they felt like owners, they'd act like owners. More engaged, more ideas, better service.
Okay, so that empowerment must have fed into their overall attitude towards like industry norms.
Directly. It led straight to his contrarian spirit, what he called swim upstream.
Go against the flow.
Exactly. Consistently challenging conventional wisdom. Like the small town strategy we talked about, he actively encouraged his team to go the other way. Don't be afraid to break the rules or question how things have always been done, especially if you find a better way to serve the customer or cut costs.
So fostering innovation by encouraging dissent almost.
In a way, yeah. And he also had this profound bias for action and continuous learning. He was never satisfied, always experimenting, trying new things.
For shameless borrowing.
That's part of it. He famously said something like, it's better to try something, fail, and learn from it than to do nothing at all. He was constantly tinkering, adapting ideas from anywhere and everywhere if they made sense. Learning was a competitive advantage for him.
Okay, one more.
Yeah, the last one, and maybe the most visible, was his humility and hands-on leadership.
The pickup truck.
The pickup truck, exactly. Long after he was a billionaire. He practiced what people later called management by walking around, or MBWA. Constantly out there, talking to associates, talking to customers.
On the front lines.
Right on the front lines. Asking them what worked, what didn't, what they needed. He famously said, our best ideas come from clerks and stock boys. This really grounded, approachable style built incredible loyalty. And it gave him insights his competitors stuck in their offices totally missed.
You've laid out those core principles so clearly. Amazing consistency. But looking back at his whole life, his whole journey, were there like three really critical moments, turning points that dramatically altered his path and Walmart's?
Definitely. You can pinpoint a few moments that were absolutely pivotal. The first, no question, was losing the Newport store back in 1950.
That early failure.
Yeah. Devastating personally at the time, obviously. But it was utterly transformative as a lesson. It forced him to become meticulous, hyper aware of details, never get caught off guard like that again.
Especially with legal stuff and ownership.
Exactly. It ingrained the absolute importance of securing assets, controlling your destiny, especially with real estate. That painful loss directly led to Walmart's famous strategy of owning most of its store properties later on. Huge advantage.
Turned a negative into a core strength. Okay, what's number two?
Second, and this is really where Walmart finds its unique niche, was his small town discount store vision in the early 1960s.
Going where others wouldn't.
Precisely. That contrarian decision, flying in the face of all the expert advice, that was the idea that launched Walmart onto a path nobody else saw. It created that blue ocean market.
Right. Minimal competition.
Minimal competition in those underserved rural areas. Mm-hmm. It let Walmart grow, get strong, establish dominance long before the big players even thought those markets were worth looking at. A strategic masterstroke, really, born from just independent thinking.
Okay. So the failure lesson, the small town insight. What's the third game changer?
The third one, and this really cemented Walmart's dominance for decades, was the massive investment in proprietary logistics and technology, mainly in the 70s and 80s.
Logistics, like trucks and warehouses.
Way beyond just trucks and warehouses, though that was part of it. This wasn't just like tweaking things. It was a revolutionary commitment for a retailer back then. He built a private hub and spoke distribution system.
Meaning
central warehouses, the hubs efficiently supplying goods to lots of surrounding stores, the spokes, much more efficient than direct shipping to every store.
Okay.
And later, he invested heavily in a private satellite communication network.
Satellites for a discount store chain.
Sounds crazy, right? But these things allowed for unprecedented cost control, super fast restocking, and crucially, real-time data sharing across all stores. They knew what was selling where instantly.
Ah, so they could manage inventory incredibly tightly.
Exactly, which meant lower costs, less waste, and ultimately the ability to consistently offer those rock bottom prices at massive scale.
Mm-hmm.
It created this almost insurmountable competitive advantage, technology and logistics as a weapon.
Those are three incredibly distinct, yet you can see how they connect. Wow. As you reflect on his life, these principles, these turning points,
mm-hmm.
What are the universal human lessons here? Things that you, our listener, can maybe take away, regardless of whether you're in business. What really stands out to you about his journey, just on a human level?
You know, what really resonates with me is his resilience in the face of setbacks. That Newport store failure, it could have crushed him.
Easily.
But it didn't define him negatively. He didn't see it as defeat. He saw it as a critical learning experience. It fueled his future diligence, his determination. It's such a powerful reminder, isn't it? That every failure, every setback can actually be a foundation stone if you approach it with that learning mindset.
Turning setbacks into fuel. Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
What else strikes you as particularly human?
Then there's the power of observation and adaptability, his whole shameless borrowing thing.
Right.
It underscores that real innovation often isn't about inventing something totally new out of thin air. It's about seeing what works elsewhere, adapting it, combining ideas in new ways, especially for markets others are ignoring.
So being open and humble enough to learn from anyone?
Exactly. He never assumed he had all the answers. Always looking, always listening. That intellectual humility is key, I think.
Mm-hmm.
His leadership by example and humility is also just a profound human lesson, isn't it? Driving the old truck, constantly talking to people on the floor.
Yeah, it was an act.
It really seems like it wasn't. It showed that true leadership isn't about titles or fancy offices. It's about serving your people, understanding the reality on the ground, being approachable. That fostered a loyalty that, frankly, money alone can't buy.
Right.
And finally, maybe this sounds boring, but it's crucial. His unwavering focus on fundamentals, his success wasn't built on like complex financial engineering or flashy marketing. No, it was this relentless, almost old school commitment to basics. Control your costs rigorously. Deliver undeniable value to your customer. Mm-hmm. Genuinely motivate your people. The simplicity, the dedication to executing those basics flawlessly. That was the genius, I think. And it's often overlooked today.
So if we had to boil all of this down then,
yeah.
Just a few core nuggets, what would be the key lessons for anyone listening, someone looking to build something great or maybe just navigate their own career better?
Okay, three takeaways. First, an emotional insight. I think it's that true sustainable success is really built on this deep, unwavering commitment to serving others. Your customers, sure, but also your employees, your community. It's not just about maximizing profit as the primary goal. It's about delivering exceptional value, finding a purpose in that service, and then almost inevitably profit follows as a result. It kind of flips the usual model, doesn't it?
It does. Serve first, profit follows. Okay, what about intellectual?
An intellectual insight. An organization's culture, especially one built on empowerment, transparency, that shared sense of ownership he fostered, that culture is its most powerful competitive weapon, more than tech, more than finance even.
Really? More than tech?
I think so, ultimately. Motivated people who feel like real partners. They'll create better experiences, find efficiencies, drive things forward in ways that technology or money alone just can't replicate. It comes down to people.
Okay. People and culture is the ultimate advantage. And finally, a universal one.
A universal insight. Never stop learning. Never stop experimenting, and never ever be afraid to challenge conventional wisdom. That bias for action he had, the extreme frugality, the humble, hands-on approach, these aren't just for retail giants.
Right.
They're principles you can apply anywhere, in any field, even today, maybe especially today. They're timeless because they tap into fundamental truths about how to get things done and how to work with people effectively.
Sam Walton built this empire by being relentlessly frugal and by cleverly serving markets everyone else ignored. Now, in today's economy, where disruption often means high-tech, big investment, focusing on cities, what principles from his story do you think are most relevant, most needed, for businesses trying to achieve genuine, sustainable growth today, regardless of their industry or who they're selling to? Something to maybe mull over until next time. And that is our deep dive into Made in America by Sam Walton. Thank you so much for joining us on this exploration.
Yeah, we really hope this conversation sparked some curiosity, maybe encouraged you to think about how you could apply some of these powerful, yet often simple, principles in your own life, your own work.
Until next time, keep digging deeper. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acacha Foundation.